All right, you're on the arms of a Glenn. And no John again. No John again. I'm going to start calling him John again. You don't actually call him Jonathan, and he hates it because his name is not Jonathan. His name is actually, no shit, for those listeners who've never heard this before, John's actual name is John Wayne. That's his actual
That's
name.
The best
John,
name ever.
Yeah, John Wayne Pinnix. That's his actual freaking name. I call him Jonathan because it bothers him. I'm going to start calling him John again. John again. So, yeah, John is off doing
stuff.
I don't know, stuff, things. So, we got Dave to talk.
Yep.
Take his place.
Woo-hoo.
You grow facial hair so much better than John again.
I do.
Yeah.
I think I shaved yesterday.
Huh?
All of it off, and then this just popped up this morning.
Oh, what a man you are. All right, guys. Remember, especially in these holidays that we've got going on, Thanksgiving and freaking Christmas coming up and everything else. Remember, we have everyone still out there doing God's work. So we still have people in Iraq and Afghanistan and all over Africa and other terrible places. We're doing terrible things to terrible people. And keep that in mind. You got a little extra money this Christmas, find an opportunity to maybe send a care package full of dip or other tobacco products, some good fresh socks, and some wet wipes to someone that you know or someone that you know who may know someone who's overseas. Good care packages are always welcome, especially this time of year when people are feeling a little far from home, something that all of us here at the Arms Room know a couple things about. Remember our Patreon thing we got going on. Get involved.
Absolutely.
You want to be more part of the show? All of our shows now for the last 4 months have all been patron suggested for the most part, with a couple exceptions. But
we listen.
Yeah. Gives you an opportunity. Even today's show, of course, coming from patrons. So get involved. There's a lot of different levels you can get involved in, all kinds of cool stuff. So go to Patreon, check out the Arms Room show. You can always look at our Arms Room Facebook page because there's always information on there as well. Overwatch Design still has their awesome sale going on. 15% off anything that they make, any of their patches or decals or whatever. Great for stocking stuffers this year. Yeah. If you don't own a Blackhearted patch, you need that in your life.
Mm-hmm.
They make all of our stuff, including our new Nobody Cares Work Harder patches.
Yep.
Yes, we just got made for the Arms Room show. So make sure you check those out on the Independence Training website or go to Overwatch Designs. I don't know if they actually sell our stuff or not, but they have all kinds of cool stuff there. So go there anyway. The Arms Room show is the coupon code for them. How was your Thanksgiving, Dave?
It was very thankful and giving. It was amazing. Actually, the best part of my Thanksgiving break was Black Friday.
Yes.
But no, it was good. We went up to Prescott. Hot weather up there, which made me kind of sad because it's just been hot everywhere.
Dude, it was 90 degrees yesterday.
Yeah, it was horrible.
Why?
But
stop.
It's getting there this next weekend. It's supposed to be in the 60s. So it's supposed to finally drop down.
Yeah, I'm headed far up north for a shooting competition this weekend. So way up north.
I'm going to be at a gun show. So I'll be inside anyways. It doesn't matter.
It's going to be chilly.
But no, it was good. Got to see the family. Yeah. Got to hang out. And then drove back down. And you got to do some UTM sparring on Black Friday.
Dude, our Black Friday event was awesome. So freaking fun.
It was a blast.
That
it was so much fun.
That was so much fun. We had a great time. We had a big class. We had a lot of people come out. Great times. Worked around movement concepts, dealing with other people, dealing with some unknown contacts.
Crowd control
exercises, dealing with some shoot house concepts, some real, real basic room work, and some real, real basic vehicle work.
Yep.
Everybody dies in UTM, man. Everybody. That's the best part about UTM. Everybody dies. Nobody gets to walk away from UTM events not feeling a little more humble about their skill sets.
Yep.
That is for sure. When you have people like trying to get out of the car so fast, they trip, fall, ball themselves up, and just get murdered. Like really good
losing
shooters.
Their firearms.
Oh, yeah. People trip and fall and toss their stuff. Like, everything's great on a static box range, right? Where targets are 100% compliant, non-competitive, and like you can just do whatever you want to, and you can move all high speed and all that. But dude, when there are incoming rounds and the whole goal is not to get shot, holy cow, do you see people do some of the most
when you're
amusing
getting out,
things?
When you're getting out of a car and you know the guy on the other side of the car is trying to get out as fast as you, and he's going to shoot you. It puts a little bit of stress on you.
I love watching it.
It's fun.
It's a blast. It's tons of fun to teach. I love dealing with UTM anyway because they're such a reliable piece of equipment. You know, something to mention too. Having worked with both UTM and C-Munitions in the past, here's why UTM I find is so much of a better product. Because we beat them up. We, you know, the guns fly in the dirt. Mm-hmm. The magazines get dropped. The rounds get racked out. They hit the ground, whatever. You can just refeed them. We have – I have literally in my training, in independence training, I have never had a stoppage with UTM. Mm-hmm. Not one freaking time. That wasn't related to something else, like, you know, a slide, a close contact and a slide hits somebody or something that doesn't cycle. Like, that's normal, but – I've never had a stoppage. I don't think I've ever gotten through a full magazine of simunitions without having a stoppage. It's a good product, like any simulation product. It works, you know, appropriately, I suppose, for the environment. But dude, UTM is such a great training product.
It's awesome.
So if you want to learn more about UTM, definitely come to our future programs that we're going to have with UTM. And we always have something about once a quarter. Seems like we do something with UTM. So something awesome, man.
More stuff in the works too.
Yes. So. So I want to talk about these I'm probably going to butcher this – Rancho Tehama Rancho Tehama Reserve over in California. We somehow missed this on last week's show.
Yeah.
Because it was on November 13, 14.
Yep.
A series of shooting. Here's the best part. I'm reading from Wikipedia here, so bear with me, okay? Using at least one unregistered semi-automatic ghost rifle.
Ghost.
And two borrowed, borrowed semi-automatic. Hey, let me just steal this and borrow it real quick. Two borrowed semi-automatic pistols recurred in the Rancho Tehama Reserve, an unincorporated community in California. Now, just hold on a second. I thought these guns were illegal in California.
What?
Hold on.
How did they get there?
Did they get there? How did this guy get possession?
I thought everything illegal just automatically knows and it stops.
Just Crazy Pants shot his wife and hit her body under his floorboards. That's fun. Then he went on a shooting rampage, killing a man and a woman, both neighbors with whom he had an ongoing feud regarding suspected meth dealing. Oh, cool. So these are upstanding individuals anyway.
Weird.
Criminal, shocker. After killing his neighbors, he stole a pickup and then he started firing at random and injured a whole bunch of people. The woman was shot 5 times, 4 of them near her heart. She was carrying a gun and had a license to carry, but she was unable to shoot because he drove away.
At least
here's an interesting, too. Here's some interesting points about what we talk about on the show. First of all, right, so she had a license and she was carrying, right, but how accessible was her firearm? Had she ever fired from her vehicle before? She had any training or experience or any kind of exposure engaging close contact through her vehicle? I seriously doubt it.
Yeah.
She stopped 4 motorists to get her to the hospital, but they all drove off. That's nice. She finally received aid from an assistant deputy sheriff who called for an ambulance. Another reason that we talk about emergency care all the time. Carrying your own kit and knowing nobody is coming to save you. God damn it. Take care of yourself, man.
It's funny because it like falls under the category. And of course, naturally, I'm going through The Gift of Fear.
Good book.
And so that category, those drivers, they might have gone like, hey, there's a lady bleeding in the middle of the street.
Mm-hmm.
That's not normal. I'm not going to stop. But you have to think about that. If I'm in this situation, if I'm shot, I don't have my own medical gear. Is somebody actually going to stop and help me? You might get that one person that goes, you know what? That looks bad. But you don't know. It was kind of like that police officer shooting we mentioned. The lady that happened in front of her house.
Yeah.
She saw an officer get shot and drops to the ground.
Yeah.
It was last week.
That's right. Yeah, we talked about that last week. Yeah.
And how she ran out to go help. Think about that. Like, she ran outside where an officer just got shot by somebody who has no qualms shooting an officer.
Mm.
You don't know where he went. You don't know if he's even still there. And he obviously has no regard to law enforcement. So how do you know he's not going to shoot you? So keep that in mind that if you feel the need to carry, I always carry the medical kit, and especially if you're carrying a firearm, carry something that can fix that so you can fix yourself. It's a big deal.
Well, it's interesting. But as the story goes on, he shot and killed a whole bunch of people.
Yeah.
He shot like over 100 rounds at a school.
At a school?
5 people were killed, including this jackass who was shot by 2 deputy sheriffs, and then the body of his wife. So technically 6 people were killed. And, all kinds of other crazy stuff. He's a crazy guy. Oh, look at his mugshot. Oh, my Lord. You got to be kidding. You see that?
Oh, yeah.
This is from January 2017 because, of course.
He's happy.
Of course, he was already a criminal. So here's let me sum this story up. A criminal steals some guns. An already existing criminal borrows some guns, okay, including a ghost raffle, all right, and he goes on a killing spree. and commits more crime.
What?
And nobody stops him because nobody other than one person actually is carrying a gun, and she probably wasn't really in a position to utilize it.
Well, at least she said...
At least she carried it.
It said that she didn't have a shot because he drove away. At least she didn't try shooting him as he was driving away.
That's good. Yeah. So. Yeah, and we can't, I mean, we can't Monday morning quarterback, right? Because I wasn't there. I don't know how he shot and how she was and all that.
Yeah. But
people are crazy, man. Crazy people can do crazy things. People, why do you carry a gun in a medical kit? It's crazy people, man. Look at this guy. Bananas. You got to look this guy up, man. I don't want to say his name because I don't want to give him any credit, but you can look at the Wikipedia Rancho Tejama Reserve shootings and just look at this mugshot. Oh, my gosh. This guy looks crazy. All right. We're done with that. Unbelievable. All right. Redwire gear moment. John's not here, so I'm going to deliver his Redwire gear moment, okay? And here it is. It is now wintertime. It's now colder, sort of. I mean, it's 90 degrees still here in the middle of the day. But in the morning time, it's actually kind of chilly enough to put on a jacket. So as you carry guns, it's important to know how your draw sequence is going to be affected by a coat or a jacket or any kind of outerwear. Rainy season, snow season's upon us in various parts of the country, of course. So, you know, you're layering up and you're still concealed carrying in your in-waistband holster, and then you put on your sweater, and then you put on your coat. How are all those things going to affect your draw sequence? How are they all going to potentially affect your ability to get your gun in the fight? We saw that a ton at the Black Friday event, because people always, when UTM comes out, they throw on a light sweatshirt or a light jacket because it freaking hurts, and they want to try to do everything they can to stop the pain. So they'll put a sweatshirt or a coat on over their gun, and then we find – I mean, how many people do you think fought their gun trying to get it out? I mean, I would say everybody at least once fought their gun. Some people got their gun up in their sweatshirt. Some people, no joke, from a training perspective, basically got murdered by their assailant because they could not get the gun out of the holster. And these are people – this was not a rookie class. This is not a new jack class. There was nobody there who had never been through training before. There was nobody there. I mean, we had vets. We had some LE guys. We had all kinds of people who were there, some very experienced shooters, some very experienced competitive shooters, and people who knew their stuff. And they still ended up on the ground fighting their gun. Mm-hmm. They were fighting their gun way more than they were fighting their assailant.
Mm-hmm.
So if you're going to put outerwear on or clothes or whatever, practice with it. Don't forget that's an important element of things.
And even gloves. How many of them have practiced drawing with gloves on?
Same thing, man. Yeah, everyone pretty much wears gloves in UTM because it sucks to get shot in the hand. As Dave, you still got your nice little scar there on your thumb from Friday. So, or wound. It's not even a scar yet.
Thank you, Mason.
So, you know, wearing gloves and all that kind of stuff, how's that going to affect you?
Yeah.
It's important to know. All right. Redwire Gear Moment brought to you by Redwire Gear. .com. Next week, John will be back, I think. I don't remember what we're talking about next week. I didn't put it down. Oh, we're talking about pokey things next week. Awesome. All right, cool. So John will be back, and we'll talk about fun stuff there. All right, on to our main topic of the day and on to our guest, Nils from ASIM Ammunition. How you doing, Nils?
Doing all right, Glenn. Thank you.
Fantastic, man. Thank you for coming in. Kind of on short notice. I think I only asked you a couple weeks ago.
So. Yeah, but we made it work, so we're happy to be here.
I appreciate that, man. So I want to kind of talk about ASIM Ammo a little bit up front just so people know who you guys are. I had not really heard much about you guys, and you're based in Arizona.
We are.
And I hadn't heard much about you until a couple years ago. I mean, you kind of hear, oh, this ammo, that. I'm like, yeah, whatever. And I managed to buy – I had an opportunity to buy about 30,000 rounds of your guys' ammo. Which is a lot in the back of your truck, by the way.
It is.
Looks like a lot of ammo in the back of your truck.
Suspension probably sits a little bit lower at that point.
Yeah, sat a little lower. And over all this time frame, I've been working my way through that. And then we went through all of that ammo with not only not a hitch, but actually better performance than what we were seeing our normal, competition and range type ammo. So then, of course, that kind of spurred us on to keep doing business with you guys. And now we're buying a lot of ammo from you guys at a time and utilizing it. And it's working phenomenally. So I think that there's a couple of things to note here. One, it's ammo that is reliable. And two, it's ammo that heads downrange with an acceptable level of accuracy, which is pretty much what we all want from an ammunition company, right?
Yeah. Well, so there are two most important things. One, that it goes bang every time you pull the trigger. And then that it hits where you want it to hit every single time. So if you have those two things covered, that's literally the recipe for perfect ammunition.
What makes other ammo not do that? Because there's definitely ammo that doesn't do that.
There is. And I kind of attribute it mostly to what I like to call the race to the bottom in the ammunition world. You know, everybody's obsessed with getting the cheapest possible round, you know, finding, you know, the 12, 13 cent 9mm round. And you can do that, but in order to do so, you sacrifice, you know, quality powder or your projectile, and you bring your quality of the round's capability down.
So I was shooting some ammunition this past weekend. I had a little private training with a couple folks doing handgun selection. They want to get involved in handguns, and so they don't have anything. So we brought out like a dozen handguns for them to shoot and a whole bunch of, you know, I had them bring all the ammo. And they brought primarily one brand, which is sold very heavily at Walmart in a white box, all right? And I don't want to get too specific, all right? And we've had a lot of problems with this ammunition over the years because it is kind of a race to the bottom type ammunition.
Sure.
The company that makes that ammunition is not a bad ammunition company.
Right.
But they have this one particular product that's designed to be sold. I mean, I don't know if this is the stuff they sweep up off the floor when they're done with QC checks.
Yeah, the particular line of ammo you're talking about is definitely a different line than their standard ammunition or their match grade ammo. So if you take their top tier and their mid tier – and then the stuff they sell to Walmart, it's a different level of ammunition.
So it really is a different type of ammo.
Mm-hmm.
Because we have had, especially in training, we've had a lot of issues. I mean, I would say we probably fired, these two folks probably fired, I'm going to say around 400 rounds or so together, 450 maybe. And we had five stoppages that were failures to fire, like primer indented, tried to cycle it back through, would not fire. You know, sometimes in cheaper ammo or sometimes even reloaded ammo, you get the high prime. The first strike will, you know, seat the primer, and the second strike may actually fire. So you go, oh, okay, cool, I got my actual bang for my buck there. But this wouldn't even – all five rounds wouldn't even bang. So you're looking at more than, you know, more than 1% there, which in ammunition is not acceptable to me. Like,
no.
I mean, if I buy a 100-round box of ammunition and even just one round doesn't fire, I'm not into that ammo.
Mm-hmm.
You know, I have too much at stake, whether it's training or competition or, God forbid, self-defense or hunting. I have too much at stake when I'm looking down the sights at whatever it is I'm looking down the sights at for it to have a failure. I get plenty of malfunction clearance opportunities with dummy rounds. You know, I need extra stuff with actual ammo.
I 100% agree. I come from a competition pistol background, and it's the exact same thing. If I have, you know, 2,000 rounds and I'm going to shoot for, you know, a couple weeks, if I have one problem, that's unacceptable.
Mm-hmm.
So any ammunition stoppage or shortcoming or any kind of issue with it, you know, isn't something I want to deal with.
And the level, you know, we're both competitive shooters,
sure.
Right? Which is such a term that is such vast, right? I'm a competitive shooter in the sense that I really like to competition shoot. It's a lot of fun. Mostly I do training stuff. So I comp when I can, a lot of long range comps,
sure.
A lot of action style matches. But my overall world isn't really that heavily based on it. I just kind of go out and have a good time. And I do pretty well at the action stuff because that's my forte, so I do pretty well at it. But I wouldn't say I'm out there all the time. You, on the other hand, even though we're both competition shooters,
right.
Air quotes, right, for those not watching on video, this is a whole different thing for you.
There is.
Because for me, at the end of a match, because it's an action style match or a long range match, I mean, usually the winners are divided by several seconds, if not more. I mean, there's times where I've placed and I'm like, oh man, I'm second place. I missed first place by 20 seconds overall in a match.
Mm-hmm.
That doesn't happen for you.
No.
Yeah.
Well, the level of competition I also compete against on a national level is a lot higher. Like, I'll travel to Florida, or actually last month I was in France for the IPSC World Shoot, which is an international pistol competition. And I ended up placing third this time around. 3 years ago, I actually won the match. But yeah, you fly, you know, 8,000 miles to go shoot 700 rounds. And yeah, what I do is a lot different than the average Joe considers competition shooting.
Oh, absolutely. Absolutely. So I kind of bring that up to say, like, there's kind of two different competition type worlds that we're playing in here. And for me, if I have a stoppage, let's just say, right, I'm like, I just want to buy cheap ammo. I'm going to burn it up at this match, which I see a lot of people do.
Sure.
And so if I have a stoppage, there's so much time typically between me and the next guy.
It doesn't really trash your match.
It's not
going to
totally affect me. I'm not going to throw a stage because I had a malfunction.
Right.
But I mean, what's your typical separation time between, let's say, you and the next guy?
If I'm at a match where I'm matched from a competitive standpoint, it'll be, you know, maybe a 1 or 2% difference between me and the guy that beats me or the guy I beat. And generally, you know, we'll be in like the top, you know, 3, 4, 5 people will be, you know, competitive. On a local scale, it's a little bit different just because I go to a local match, like your match.
Right.
You know, I might be, you know, 20% above second place.
Right.
Just because the level of competition is lower.
Right. But when you go to the big league, so to speak, a stoppage or more than one.
Fractions of a second matter.
Screw you.
Yeah. So if you have one high primer, you have one primer that doesn't go off, that's going to cost you probably a second to clear. Right. If you realize exactly what happened and it's an easy malfunction, you can just rack the slide back and release it, and the spent round ejects and the new round chambers and you're good to go. You wasted at least a second. You know, a course of fire that might only take 10 seconds, that's a 10% drop in your score. So it's a huge difference.
And not to mention that it took you a second to clear it, but there's still that time of reacquiring sights and trigger and everything else.
In a perfect world, you lost a second. Yeah. So 10%, exactly.
So it's like there's a lot that can potentially go on. So for our listeners who are competitors, I mean, a failure to fire from ammunition can absolutely mean the difference between doing well in a match, maybe even winning the match, and not.
Yeah, without a doubt.
And certainly, as I've mentioned before, in hunting environments, I mean, for me, man, especially because most of the hunting I do is up close, it's predator hunting, it's very fast-paced, you get a couple of seconds to shoot typically, and that's it. You have a very small window to engage, and I pull up and I get a click and no bang.
Yeah, when you're hunting, I mean, that noise you made from, you know, your round not going off, now your prey is alerted to your presence and it's gone.
And certainly in a self-defense situation, because, of course, ASIM also makes self-defense ammunition.
We do. Yep.
And we tested some of that stuff in our one of the videos that we put up on our YouTube channel recently. We were firing through various materials and into gelatin blocks. Mm-hmm. And I got to tell you, your 45 ACP stuff, which round do you use in the jacket hall point?
We use a couple different ones. Our primary one is 185 grain. It's a Barnes projectile, so it's a whole 100% copper jacket.
This was not that one. That was it's the TAC or something like that?
Yeah, probably the Tactical, which is a 130 grain projectile.
That 230 grain. That thing is mean.
How did it perform?
Perfectly.
Good.
Exactly the way we wanted to. We fired it through clothing. We fired it through walls. We fired it through everything. That thing performed phenomenally, right? So, again, from that self-defense perspective, we definitely want rounds that go bang every time. Because we often hear people when they buy ammunition, they're like, I'm just out there plinking. I'm just out there shooting. I'm just going to training. Hey, it's better training if we have to clear more malfunctions, right? And on one hand, I can see their point. Mm-hmm. And you get some clearance. But I would rather be adding dummy rounds into the mix than wasting 30 to 50 cents or whatever it is, whatever kind of ammo I'm using, just learning how to clear a malfunction. That seems pretty dumb to me. Right? I'll add dummies in the mix if I need to practice clearing my malfunctions. I don't want to practice clearing malfunctions with my rounds.
There are 1,000 things you can practice before you should be practicing gun malfunction clearing anyway. You need to learn how to shoot the gun first. And in that time between not knowing anything and being really good, you're going to experience plenty of malfunctions, whether they're ammo-related, mag-related, condition-related, gun-related. Could be, you know, 100 different things.
Now, what kind of ammo do you, as a competitor, because you haven't always worked for ASIN.
I haven't.
Right? So you've used a lot of different ammo in your time, and certainly you shoot, I don't even know how many rounds you shoot a year, way more than me.
Yeah, I probably shoot personally from like a competition standpoint and practice and training, I'll shoot upwards of 40,000 to 50,000 a year if I'm, you know, putting in a lot of prep work for some big matches. Now I've kind of, you know, tailored it back to maybe 20,000 a year. So, I shoot quite a bit. Yeah. I have shot a couple different kinds of factory ammunition, and before I started being sponsored and then working for ASIM, I'd actually reload my own. So I've got my reloading press. It's a Dillon Super 1050. Works great. You know, it produces good quality ammunition. And then the ASIM sponsorship allowed me to kind of focus more on the shooting rather than reloading my ammo to, you know, how I wanted it. You know, so I know I've got good high quality ammunition. It's going to go bang. It's going to hit where I want, and I don't need to put in the extra time to load it myself.
And I think that's an important thing. You know, I'll shoot match grade ammunition and even action matches, and people are like, I can't believe you're shooting match grade ammo. It's just an action match. You know, just get burner ammo and burn her down. You know, and I'm like, No, because I like two things about my ammo. I want it to go bang every time, and I want it to go down range with an acceptable level of accuracy, whatever it may be for that platform, that distance, or that system. Sure. So, you know, for me, it's worth shooting the match-grade ammo. I don't reload. I don't have time or desire. Two things I lack that mean, you know, if you lack both those things, you're right. Not going to reload.
No kidding.
So what are some types of ammo that people can look at without necessarily – I mean, I don't care if you name brands. I understand if you don't want to. But what are some things in ammunition that you think, man, your average shooter all the way up to your competition shooter, to your self-defensive person, to your, you know, hunter, this is stuff you should stay away from? I mean, how do you look at a piece of ammo? And again, if you don't want to get brand specific, sure, that's fine. But how do you look at ammo and go, like, that's not good ammo? What are things about the ammo
There are a few things you can kind of look for. I mean, obviously, you have to have the ammunition in front of you. But a lot of companies don't pay a lot of attention to their overall length consistency. So sometimes you'll get a spread, you know, from an overall length of maybe 1.1 inches to 1.15 inches. Mm. So you have a huge deviation from, you know, the longest cartridge to the shortest cartridge. And that can do a couple things. It can affect the feeding in your gun. It can affect how the crimp or the crimp of the case is around the projectile. And it can also affect the velocity. So the deeper the projectile is in the case, the less internal case volume the powder has. So now the pressure is increased, and then your velocity is going to increase depending on your powder. Mm. So just that, the overall length can affect reliability and velocity a lot. Some companies like to use a harder primer, and they usually do that just because it's cheaper, less expensive. But in doing so, if you have, say, a Glock with a lightened striker spring, mm-hmm, it's not necessarily going to set them off with 100%, you know, consistency.
I've seen problems with both of those actually very recently. So my son just started shooting competitively about 6 or so months ago.
Congratulations.
Yeah.
That's awesome.
Congratulations on draining my ASIM. That's why I have to order so much ASIM from you, Nils.
Yeah, he's going to get a lot more expensive. Just wait. Because I used to be that kid.
Oh, it's great. I mean, I love having him shoot. But we had some ammo sitting around. I'm like, here, man, just use some of this stuff. It wasn't bad ammo. Mm-hmm. But I'm like, hey, before we crack open this new ASIM, we'd run out. I'd bought some other stuff while I was waiting for that other order to come in. And so I grabbed it. He grabbed it. I started putting in a couple of my Glock mags, and it was a no-go, man. It was just choking on it because that overall length was just off enough on, I would say, maybe every fifth or so round, sure, that I would actually get stoppages in my magazine. Mm-hmm. So because the gun he shoots, the mags have a little bit more tolerance in them, it runs perfectly through his gun, but it wouldn't run through mine.
Interesting.
So it's one of those things where even though this was what I would consider burner ammo, training ammo, whatever, it was definitely a problem. And it wasn't the cheapest, certainly wasn't the most expensive, it wasn't good match grade stuff, but it was definitely commonly available ammunition.
Right.
You know, and then from a class perspective, which something that was interesting is we had a student in a handgun class maybe 2 weeks ago that was shooting a Wilson Combat 9mm 1911. Well-made gun, works, right. Okay. Yeah. Not my favorite platform, but whatever.
Well, for a carry gun, it's, you know, a little hard for me to justify a $3,000 1911.
Right.
But Wilson Combat does make some phenomenal pistols.
So it's a cool gun, sure, right? And so starts shooting, and she was using some foreign-made ammunition. It was good brass case foreign-made, mm-hmm, stuff. And I would say probably at least every fourth or fifth round was not detonating, right? Hard primers.
Right.
And that's what I told her. I'm like, I grabbed a handful of ASIM out of my bag and said, here, try this. Ran like a champ. No problems. So I'm like, okay, tell you what. Since that thing I know has a super light hammer spring, let me just swap you ammo. Right?
Sure.
So not to not to give too much props to ASIM here, right? Because even though they totally deserve it.
The stuff you use for your classes
but
isn't.
But it fed perfectly the whole rest of the class, right? I just swapped her ammo and no problem.
And the stuff you use for your classes, that kind of thing, isn't our super high premium match grade ammunition either.
No.
It's what we call our range line. So, mm-hmm, it's our remanufactured. And it's, you know, processed brass, so it's been fired once, so it's, sure, been resized, and that brings the cost down. But you can still use, you know, a higher quality, you know, piece of, you know, the powder can be decent quality, the projectile can be decent quality, and then you can maintain a good quality primer as well.
And from an accuracy standpoint, you know, we've accuracy tested several different types of brands. And I'm not going to say it's beneficial. We're not doing it from a ransom rest or anything like that. Yeah. But when we're out, usually as instructors, we'll gather up a few different types of ammo. Hey, you shoot this. I'll shoot this. Let me get a mix of this. And you just kind of check what ammo's, you know, going down range. Most people for their handguns, they think, if I'm, you know, keeping it in the, you know, a headshot at whatever, 7 meters or something like that, I'm happy with that. You know, if I can keep a high center chest at, you know, 10 meters, okay, I'm happy with that. But I want to be more specific because for me, I want to remove every variable that I can so that I can make all the mistakes I want and it's not my equipment. And that's the last thing I want is to go like, oh, it's because if what if I would have used better ammo? Would I have done better there? You know, what if I would have used a better gun? Would I have done better? I don't want those variables.
Sure.
I want the biggest variable to be me. So if I can select a good firearm with good ammunition, then I've removed as many variables as possible.
And that's a good thing to do just in general when you get, you know, a large quantity of ammo or something you're thinking of buying in bulk. Actually put it on a rest or do some slow fire and group it at, you know, 10 yards, 15 yards, 25 yards and see how the group opens up. You know, if it shoots a 2-foot group at 25 yards, it's probably not the ammo you want to shoot in a match and maybe not even the ammo you want to shoot in a practice session.
Now, what are some other things to look for? You know, you mentioned overall length. You mentioned potential hard primers. I see personally just from seeing so many types of ammunition like you have over the years and a lot in training, and you've certainly seen a lot in competition. I would say probably with the type of competition you're doing, other than like local matches, you're probably seeing higher end stuff or reloads.
A lot of people reload just because of the sheer volumes they go through. But that's also an extra cost associated with that. I mean, a good reloading press is $1,000.
Right.
Plus get started.
The time commitment and the desire. Right?
Once you factor it all out, yeah, you're loading ammo for half the price, but you're paying yourself, you know, 2 cents an hour.
Right.
So right. That doesn't really work.
So what are some other things that people are looking for? Like for hard primers, I would say foreign ammunition seems to have the hardest primers.
Generally speaking, yes. We use a primer called from CCI, and they have a very consistent primer cut, really. It used to be super hard. Like back 20, 30 years ago, the CCI primers were actually known as a really hard primer, and you kind of didn't want them from a competition or a self-defense standpoint just because they were harder. Recently, they've softened their recipe, and they've made it a little bit more malleable, so it's easier for that firing pin to strike the surface of the primer. So we use all CCI primers in all of our ammunition, both rifle and pistol. So the primer is one thing. Another thing to look for is whether or not it actually fits your barrel. So some companies chamber check their ammunition. Well, most companies I would hope do. But a lot of them will use a very loose spec chamber check gauge. So you can go tight, you can go loose, you can go in the middle. All of our stuff, and especially our match grade stuff, is chamber checked in a very tight gauge. So if it fits that gauge, it's going to fit your chamber no matter what. So the lower quality ammunitions, they'll use a looser gauge. So a lower quality round that hasn't been resized properly will still fit. So we make sure that's eliminated.
Now, what are some other things that you're looking for? Like, let's talk about steel ammo for a second. Steel case, because it's becoming popular.
Sure.
I was out at the range the other day with the folks from Timney, and we were doing a big test on their new MPX trigger, which is great, by the way. It's a cool trigger. We had to fire 1,000. We had to, right, fire 1,000 rounds as fast as we possibly could. Like 6 different types of ammo. You know? It's just a fun thing. And so we were just jamming mags and firing. And we were getting good practice. We weren't just shooting in the dirt. We had several steel targets set up. So we were still kind of running through some shooting exercises. But the purpose was to get it as hot as we could. And so we had 6 different types of ammo. And basically the way that they wanted to check it is their guy went down and just bought everything from Walmart. Like, give me 6 different brands, as much as you can, 1,000 rounds total. That way he's like, this is where people are going to go, right? This is the worst case scenario.
So he's got some UP stuff, some Wolf, some, you know, God knows what.
We had the new Winchester steel case, which I had not fired before. And I wanted it to choke so badly. Oh, I just wanted it to not work. Unfortunately, it worked. But I didn't want it to work. What I've seen with steel case foreign ammunition over the years is how dirty it is.
Right.
And so it's not the steel case that's the problem. Yeah, you'll see extra wear and tear on your gun at the 10 or 15,000 round mark, but you're not going to see it if you put in, you know, the average person doesn't shoot not even near that much. You know, even me, I shoot 10, 12,000 or more rounds a year. I consider that a lot. You blow me away with because it's a lot more.
Well, my round count spread across different platforms, both 223, sure, the AR-15, and then 9mm, 40 and 45. So
I'm saying, like, you go like, oh, well, I shoot probably an average number of rounds for right, a big competitor, right? I think I shoot like, well, I shoot way more than the average person. And the average person shoots 500 rounds a year, 1,000 rounds a year. Maybe if they go to a
that's
class.
Probably that's probably a high estimate, but yeah.
I think the NSSF recently did a thing maybe a couple of years ago where they interviewed everybody that was a member that would obviously respond. And that's, you know, so it's stats are what they are. Mm-hmm. But and it was pretty low. It was like less than 500 rounds a year, the average shooter.
And that's of the people that responded.
And that's of the people that respond.
Right.
Absolutely. So it's like.
Who are members of NSSF.
Yeah. So it's, yeah. So it's like you have a pretty slanted statistics here.
Right.
But I would say, you know, most average shooters I know, unless they go to a class or they go start shooting competition or something, they just do not shoot that much. They just don't.
Well, unfortunately, I mean, the standard trend for the average person that buys a gun is they go into a gun store. And I worked at a gun store for almost 3 years. They go into the gun store. They ask the guy behind the counter what they should get. They'll either get a good recommendation or a bad recommendation. Mm-hmm. They're sold some self-defense ammo, maybe some practice ammo if the sales guy knows what he's doing. And then the person might go to the range and shoot a box or two, and then they'll never shoot it again.
Yep. They load it up and go, I'm ready.
They'll put their self-defense ammo. Yep. They probably didn't even test to see if it worked in right, the first place
right,
in their gun, and they put it either beside their bed or in their car. They carry it every single day.
Mm.
But the only time they practiced or used it was the one time they bought it.
Yep.
And unfortunately, that's the norm in the shooting industry, and it's sad.
And so when you're looking at, like, how much wear and tear is this foreign ammo or dirty ammo or whatever going to do on the average person's gun, it's not.
Right.
My issue that I've seen with it over the years, and especially from a training perspective, because so many people are trying to train cheap, which I get.
Sure.
But they'll bring, you know, the cheapest ammo they can get, steel case foreign stuff, and it starts with a T, ends with piece of shit. And just if you're trying to spell that out. And it's constantly choking. Now, it runs great through some guns.
Right.
Some people will run that stuff like – just unbelievably high round counts, and it just runs and runs and runs and runs and runs. Mm-hmm. But most people, especially with well-made higher-end guns, it just chokes constantly. And the issue that I see with it, and correct me if I'm wrong here or based on your knowledge, if you've got some different experience, as things get dirtier and dirtier and dirtier inside the chamber, this stuff starts to stick. And that's usually the problem that we see with it is a stuck case. And usually then that includes, you know, jamming a metal rod down your – steel rifling and or molly coated rifling, whatever you've got, and just raking it back and forth because people are not very careful about how they put rods down their barrels, and then popping this case out and then just continuing to shoot, right? Not effectively cleaning the right, chamber until something else gets stuck. And then we run that terrible rod down the bore again and we jam that thing
and we
out.
All know that running steel rods through your barrel is really good for accuracy in the long run.
Right. Yeah. Really helps the rifling
it
stay
does.
Really in yeah, really good, well kept. So you end up with these issues that most people aren't really going to experience negative effects from because they just don't shoot enough rounds.
Well, you're absolutely right. I mean, there are two main things, in my opinion, with the steel-cased ammo. One, generally the powder they use is going to be and yield a dirtier burn, right?
Yeah.
So that's going to produce more carbon buildup in the chamber, whether you're shooting it in a handgun or an AR-15. The AR is obviously worse since it's gas-driven. All that gas is shot back up into the chamber to work the bolt carrier and all that system. So the more debris you have in there, not only is it in the chamber, but it's also in the bolt carrier mechanism. So that's just going to cause another set of issues.
Mm-hmm.
Another thing is the actual steel case itself. The steel on steel with the extractor, especially in the AR-15, I think is a huge negative for steel ammo. And the main reason for that is the AR-15 is designed around a brass case, which is softer than your extractor, right?
Mm-hmm.
Steel, brass, the brass is going to give, move a little bit, and it's not going to damage the actual part on the gun. With steel on steel, now you have two parts that have the same Rockwell hardness of each other, and they're going to wear a lot more. And like you said, if you get stuck in your chamber, now you're ripping a steel part out of your steel chamber with a steel extractor, and that's a lot more tension and wear and potential damage on the extractor. The one time I love steel case ammo is through an AK or something.
Oh, absolutely.
It's designed around
what
steel.
What it's designed for.
Exactly.
Yeah.
I mean, my AK will run steel case ammo all day long. It won't care. And in fact, a lot of people prefer that over some of the new brass case ammo.
I think that's all market. I shoot through my AK platform.
Well, for, you know, 180,000, there's no reason not to.
Yeah. Yeah. And it's made for that.
Right, exactly.
Now, you could look at the AR and say, okay, well, it's a new extractor from Brownells or whatever. probably $25 or something. Mm-hmm. Okay, so I can get a new extractor. And that's less than the money that it would cost for me to get extra. Okay, but cool. Now so you're going to price it out.
Exactly. So now assume you have a malfunction when you're out in the desert playing with your friends and your extractor breaks. Mm. Doesn't matter. You can either pop a new bolt in or take your gun home and punch your extractor out and put a new one in. It's not that big a deal. But if you're shooting a match where you're on the clock or you're in a war zone or it's a carry gun and your life depends on it, if you have that malfunction, that gun is dead.
Yeah.
And I don't mean dead from it won't fire, but every round you fire is going to take you a minute to shoot.
Right.
Because the malfunction is that bad. So for a gun that you want to work all the time, every single time, that's not an AK, I personally wouldn't use steel-cased ammunition.
Now, the Winchester stuff I had fired was interesting because it wasn't as dirty as the other stuff. American-made powder, but steel-cased to bring the price down. So there are some possible advantages to going with the cheaper stuff. I will say this, and a lot of people have asked, especially some of the patrons who asked for this show topic, were like, well, how do you find out what's good ammo? How do you discover for yourself? You know, they were like, you guys have this experience in shooting all these brands. So like you can walk into a store and you can look at the wall and be like, nope, nope, nope. Yes, 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 nope. Right. I will shoot these things because I know they're good and I won't shoot any of that because I know it's crap. A lot of that just comes from experience. And we have a very interesting experience as an instructor. I see hundreds of students every year come through with tons of different platforms and tons of different brands of ammunition, and I just pay attention to what works and what doesn't, and I look for trends. I look for the fact that this ammo, you know, this ammo buckshot just historically patterns like junk. This ammo rifle round historically is not, you know, consistently accurate. This brand pistol ammo just historically malfunctions a lot or has hard primers or whatever. I just look and see, like, if one person has a problem, so be it. That could be, you know, isolated incident. It could be a number of other factors. But when you've got 10 people or 20 people who are having the same problems, then that's obvious. You, from a competitive standpoint, also just being in the shooting community, you see the same thing. Maybe slightly different perspective, but the same thing.
Right.
So it's easy for us. We have this great pool from which to draw. Other folks don't. Like you mentioned, you know, the average shooter is going to buy their pistol, shoot a few rounds, jack it in for self-defense, and call it a day. Maybe we get lucky and they take a class a year. Maybe, you know, something like that. But for the most part, they're not going to. So how does the average person, do you think, like, what would be advice you could give someone? How do they find out what's the best brand? What's going to work in their gun?
Well, I mean, you and I have kind of a unique situation where, you know, we have that resource to pull from. And you're right. The average person doesn't. But there are still some rounds where I have no clue and I don't have any experience or background in, and, you know, I go to check. And the best way that I've found to check on a particular manufacturer or bullet weight or whatever is just go into Google, type in the name, and then add sucks or some kind of negative comment to it. And you'd be amazed what kind of stuff will pull up on Google or YouTube videos or something like that, and use that information to base your purchase on.
And I think also, you know, if you're curious – not everyone has the budget for this necessarily, but shoot it.
Yeah.
And it's not that expensive. I mean, you can go to Walmart, Sportsman's, Bass Pro, or whatever it is you shop.
Sure.
And you can buy six or more probably different brands of whatever caliber you're shooting and go out and shoot them. Which one's the most accurate? If even one had a hiccup, just discard that one altogether because you're only sampling from six. So if there's one that's having a problem, get rid of the one that's having a problem. Look and see, you know, what I've done this before with, especially with precision rifles, when obviously when I'm testing for that kind of accuracy, or even ARs when I'm testing for match grade accuracy, where I clean the gun, I shoot the ammo, I check my accuracy, I check my reliability, and then I check the gun. Now, just really foul my gun, really nasty. Usually I'll shoot it suppressed and unsuppressed. Like, is it really gross afterwards? If it's acceptably dirty, so be it, right? And then that's just a box, usually maybe two. And I may do that four or five different brands and just kind of checking the results each time. Which one was the most reliable? If they were all reliable, maybe that's a moot point, all right? Which one was the most accurate? There's definitely going to be some differences there. And then which one fouled my gun the least? Because whichever one fouled my gun the least, that means I can run a whole lot longer on that. Mm-hmm. Which is something else I have to mention about ASIM. I find that it's definitely less fouling. And even though we're running a lot of the – we started with you guys by running the 124-grain match, the actual match grade stuff.
Right.
That stuff is freaking amazing. That was the stuff I started like 30,000 rounds of, and that stuff is incredible. Then for our just training and stuff like that, now we're going to the 147 grain reman that you guys have. And on both sides of that, though, I found that even with this, which we could call bulk ammo or training ammo or whatever, it's still cleaner than other ammo. Is there a difference in how you guys are doing
that? Well, and the main reason for that is the actual propellant that we use. So like I said earlier, I mean, some companies try and get away with the absolute, you know, bottom of the barrel, the cheapest propellant they can. And we try our best to avoid that. We want something that's obviously inexpensive, but we want to retain the clean burn. We want to retain the consistency and the velocity and all that kind of stuff. So we don't want to sacrifice our price point to the point of actually reducing our quality.
You know, I like what you said earlier, and I hadn't heard that term used before, but I think I'm going to use it now, that whole race to the bottom. That's mm-hmm. how I'm going to start, you know, referring to ammunition when students ask, like, well, you know, all these companies are racing to the bottom. Who can be the cheapest? We want to provide the cheapest ammunition. And oftentimes when we talk about other things in the gear market, you know, whether it's tactical gear or firearms or whatever it may be, we often tell people, like, look, nobody made a gun that was $200 less or $300 less because they have some kind of magic secret formula. They shaved corners somewhere. They cut corners. They did something. They didn't do something that this other company is doing. Same thing with tac gear. People are like, oh, I wouldn't wear a $500, you know, $600, $1,000 plate carrier when, you know, Condor sells a $100 plate carrier. Cool, bro. You know, your application of plate carrier, my application of a plate carrier might be totally different. If your plate carrier fails, it's probably okay. You know, depending on what I'm doing, if my plate carrier fails, I might get shot.
Right.
So it's kind of a big deal, you know?
No kidding.
So it's kind of like one of those things where a cheaper price doesn't necessarily, you know, is definitely, I should say, not going to mean that you're not going to get as high of quality, but you guys aren't stooping to that level.
Right.
Even with your.
Yeah, even with our range line, even with our range line or our bulk line. And for our quality, we try to take it to the next level on our actual match grade stuff. And there is a distinct difference in felt recoil, you know, the fouling of the gun and accuracy between our range line and then our match ammo. So as good as this stuff is, our match ammo is that much better. And the main thing, obviously, it's going to be accurate. Everything is accuracy tested, 25 yards. Everything's velocity checked from lot to lot to maintain our consistency. But another thing we do with our premium pistol ammo especially is we use a powder that's more expensive, but the formulation of the powder is such that it actually burns cooler than your standard cheap powder that most people would run in this kind of ammunition. And when I say coolers, you know, you take a box of 50 rounds, you shoot it through your Glock 17, 50 rounds of, you know, bulk ammo somewhere is going to heat the gun up pretty quick. If you shot the same 50 rounds of our match ammo through it, you'd notice a significant difference in the actual temperature of the gun, and it would be much cooler.
Which would matter especially if you're running these things through a suppressor.
Through a suppressor, but also if you're shooting a training class like one of the ones you've got, you know, where you're shooting 500 rounds in a day, and maybe you shoot a couple hundred rounds in, you know, the course of 20 or 30 minutes, the guns get really hot.
You can holster that bad boy.
Exactly.
Waistband holster, right? You know about it quick.
You don't want to melt your Uncle Mike's holster.
Turn that thing of nylon to a big old horrible mess. So do you think price makes a difference? Do you think price is a way to determine? You know, we talked about other things like, okay, we talked about overall length. We talked about primers. We talked about quality of powder, you know, fit and the fit capability of a tight chamber and what types of gauges different companies are using. So there's a lot of things that I still can't necessarily tell
by opening
up this box of ammunition and pulling out a round. How in the heck can your average person – is price going to be a determining factor?
It can be, but generally it's all based on the attention to detail each company puts into it. And ASIM prides herself in being attentive to every possible detail of the round. So unfortunately, for the end consumer, the only way for them to test it is to actually shoot it and find out. You know, some people's guns shoot differently. I mean, your gun's going to shoot different than mine. Some people's guns like a particular bullet weight. Right. Like, say, AR-15, you don't want to shoot a 55 grain bullet through a 1-7 twist and expect some awesome accuracy. That faster twist rate is going to be better with a 70 grain or 75 or 77. And that's just kind of the way the AR-15 barrels work. So I think it is something you really have to buy and do your research and test on your own. And don't take my word for it. You know, buy some of mine, buy some Atlanta Arms, buy some, you know, some Black Hills, buy some Federal Match, buy everything. And see what works best for you and then buy that. And hopefully it's ASIM.
When we talk about match grade, I mean, I know, right? You know the difference between match-grade ammunition. It's easy for us to tell the difference. There's definitely going to be an accuracy difference. There's going to be reliability.
Sure.
The rounds themselves are checked. But what is the real difference between how a match-grade ammunition, your 124-grain match, which I think is some of the best pistol ammo that I've shot, and your 147-grain training, which is still great, but as just from my experience, definitely not the 124-grain stuff.
Sure.
It's great stuff, but definitely there's a difference in accuracy. So what is – how are they manufactured differently? A match grade – because sometimes for the average consumer, right, they're going to hold up a piece of match grade ammo. Mm-hmm. They're going to hold up a regular piece of ammo and visibly no difference.
Right.
Right. So how does someone who's kind of doesn't know as much about ammunition as us, how are they going to figure that out? What is the real difference between how a piece of match grade ammo is made and how a bolt pack shoots us at the range and have a good time type
of ammo? Well, so the interesting thing about our bulk pack and our match grade ammunition is it's actually made on the same machines. It's made on the same lines. So if we were doing a run of the remanufactured 147 9mm, we'll actually take it off of the, you know, production capacity of the 147 grain practical match, which is our premium 9mm match ammunition. So it's the same machine. It's running at roughly the same speed. We'll sometimes run the remanufacture a little bit faster just because we don't look to get the exact same consistency out of the reman as we do the high quality super match ammo. But the biggest difference, in my opinion, is going to be your accuracy. You know, you'll see, you know, group size with this will be, you know, one thing at 25 yards, and it'll be, I would expect, half that or better, depending on your gun, out of the match grade ammunition. And on top of that, felt recoil will be different. So with this powder, it's going to have a little bit more of a snappy feel. And again, it's going to burn hotter. The match grade ammo is going to burn cooler, and it's going to have a lower felt recoil.
So there's a lot of advantages to shooting match grade ammo, especially with pistol ammo, other than just potential better accuracy.
Yes, there, you know, absolutely.
Because there's going to be people who are like, well, I don't want match grade ammo because, you know, I'm just plinking. Or the types of competitions I shoot, you know, two anywhere on them. You know, an IMSA right. target or whatever. Maybe they don't shoot. Like for me, in the action matches we do, man, we can go from almost contact shooting paper to suddenly a 60-yard pistol shot or several of them in a row after running for a long time and carrying your freaking armor and all this other crap. So it's like, for us, we need all accuracy we can get. Again,
I knew there was a reason I stopped shooting your matches. Yeah. I'm tired of carrying plate carriers and flipping tires.
See, I remember the first time you came to one of our matches, you like, look at this tire. Like,
it was literally,
you guys can't be serious.
It was a CrossFit competition that involved running around with a rifle.
That's right. Awesome. That's right.
It was a lot of fun, but I'm not that physical. I'm not that's built right. like, you know.
That's right. It was there was a CrossFit comp and a rifle match broke out.
Exactly.
Basically what happened. Yeah. But,
and 3 years later, I still remember that match. It was a lot of fun.
So, you know, it's like for us, we want all the action we can get because – we may have to make those 50-yard pistol shots, those long-range shots, you know, especially being winded or having had completed something or from some weird position or whatever. But that's not necessarily for everybody.
Right. Well, it's all about eliminating external factors. So you want everything, whether you succeed or fail, to be based on you,
mm-hmm.
right? You don't want it to be because your sights are loose or your ammo shoots like garbage or something else. You know, the sun's in my eyes, it's a windy day. You don't right. want those excuses. You want it to be based on your performance and what you can deliver. So if you eliminate the ammo being an issue, you eliminate the gun being an issue, then you can focus on making yourself better and worry about your performance.
So let's kind of shift gears here a little bit. And we've talked about the manufacturing of ammunition. We've talked about different brands. We've talked about all that. I think to probably sum all that up, you could say buy a few different brands and maybe weights, try them through your gun,
mm-hmm.
see what works best, and then just go with that. You know, like a lot of times when I find a round that's good, I just stick with it until something better comes along. Or
right.
really, and for something better to come along, I almost have to trip over it for me to even pay attention to it because it's kind of like ASIM, right? When I first stumbled on them because it was like, hey, I'm using this other stuff and it works just sure. fine.
Yeah, and we're a smaller you know? Company, relatively new. The big thing, especially with the precision long range ammo, mm-hmm. I mean, I wouldn't be surprised if you'd have to spend a few hundred dollars, like $400 or $500, $600
easy
to figure out exactly what your gun likes.
Yeah.
And it's going to vary from different manufacturers and then different bullet weights from mm-hmm. that manufacturer based on your barrel length, your barrel twist, you know, the type of rifling you have in your barrel. All mm-hmm. those are a factor when it comes to accuracy mm-hmm. at the the end of the range.
So you've got to test your ammo through your guns. And if you've got several different, let's say, 9mm platforms that you use, maybe you got a PCC and you've got a couple different handguns, mm-hmm. you've got all that, then you're going to have to do it across all of them. So, yeah, it cannot, it's not necessarily the cheapest way to do it, or the cheapest thing to do, I should say, but it's the best way to do it.
Absolutely.
Because now you know, or you can just buy ASIN, man. I'll just call it a day because that's probably going to be the winner anyway, is what I found. So, yeah, I mean, there's a reason, like we talked about, Nils and I were talking on the show, about how, as a company, both Independence Training and the Arms Room, how do we kind of make alliances, or, you know, how we enter into relationships with different companies. And my trick to doing that always has been, since the very beginning, I've been at this almost a decade now, is always use the products first. Does the product work for me? Does it perform better than anything else? And if it does, then I want to start. I mean, we shot over 30,000 rounds of your guys' ammo before I came to you and said, hey, we'd like to shoot your ammo some more. You know what I mean? Before we even got to that point, because I wanted to know beyond the shadow of a doubt, this is the stuff that I definitely want to shoot.
Yeah, and that makes sense. I mean, you want to put your name behind something and tell other people that it's a quality product. You don't want it to come short when it's actually time for it to deliver.
So I have no problems at all, you know, for all of our listeners out there hearing the fact that I'm saying, yeah, you should buy ASIM ammo and use it, and I know you're going to be happy with it. So let's talk real quick about safe and proper storage of ammo. Take a couple minutes here. Are there any particular common problems or mistakes that you see people make? Because we have to consider that, you know, you find ammunition loaded in a 1911 magazine from 1936 or whatever, and people find it, oh, still locked in some old Army Depot store, and they pull it out and they shoot it, and it goes bang every time, and it goes great. So certain storage conditions of ammunition, you know, you have all this surplus ammo. I mean, we know how well it was treated, you know, as it was on some boat rocking across the Indian Ocean or whatever. So sure. It's like there's definitely ammo that gets beat up a lot and still functions. And here in Arizona, we have a very dry environment, so it's a little bit easier for us to store ammo. Where it's not so dry, it might be harder. But what are some common mistakes, since you travel all over the world shooting, what are common mistakes you see people make when they're storing ammunition?
Well, the number one thing that I've found with ammunition and storage and transportation of it is that moisture is not your friend. Mm. You want to keep your ammo dry. You don't want any kind of moisture getting anywhere near your ammunition, right? Like if I'm at a match and, you know, it's raining outside and I'll accidentally drop a round on the ground and there's any kind of water on the ground, I don't use that piece of ammunition. Like that round is dead to me, right? So the drier you can keep your ammo, the better. As far as storage, I don't think you can beat military surplus ammo cans as long as they've got a good seal around the lid and the actual body of the ammo can, just to keep it dry. Another thing to be aware of, I think, is when you purchase ammo online, they'll ship it to your house. If you're not home, they'll leave it at your door. And if it's raining, it's going to get wet. Mm-hmm. That's bad. And I've had a couple people, you know, ask to return ammunition after it's been water damaged because of that type of situation. And we do what we can to take care of it. But at the same time, it's your responsibility to make sure that your ammunition is stored properly, you know, from the second you buy it and it's delivered to your house to the time you actually fire it.
So moisture, and I totally agree. That's definitely the most common thing I see that people make the mistake. Desiccant packs, oxygen packs, things like that are always a good idea. You know, stuff that I cycle through a lot, I don't mind leaving out. But
right, ammo and we're fortunate here in Arizona. It's a dry environment.
Oh yeah,
you know, it's only humid, you know, a couple times out of the year. Mm. So we're very fortunate, you know, in that respect, just because of our environment.
So to kind of wrap things up, we always like to hear some kind of unique perspectives from our guests, so that our listeners can draw something more than just the topic. You know, you've been in competitive shooting now for a while. You've done pretty well. Like you said, you won, you know, like kind of casually, you know, a few years ago, I got first. Yeah. I got first in that particular event, the World Championships, no big deal. But when you're dealing with those kinds of events, what are a couple of things that you do, not necessarily comparing yourself to other competitors, but what are a couple of things that you do before a competition that you feel really gives you the edge?
A lot of my prep before a match is gear prep. So making sure all my gear is sorted out and set and ready to go before I have to leave. And there are times where, you know, I'm rushed getting everything together at the last second, and that's the last situation I want to put myself in. I want to have, you know, my ammo ready, good to go, you know, ammo I know that's going to work. I want to have my gun clean, sighted in, any possible things that could break or wear on it, I want to either have replaced or know that they're in good working order. Something as simple as checking to see if your front and rear sight are attached to the slide correctly are very, very important when you go, you know, travel out of state or out of country to a shooting competition. You've got to make sure that stuff works. So that's probably the number one thing I'll do before I leave. And my stuff is notorious for, I have very reliable equipment. I can't remember the last time I had a malfunction at a major competition that wasn't based on some kind of external factor, like a prop or something like that. So my gear runs very, very well, and that's one of the reasons I'm able to shoot at the level I do, is because my gun works. My guns work.
Is there anything mental that you do to prep for a match? Do you have some kind of secret Zen something?
Oh, yeah. No, I've got this thing where I'm able to not think about anything. Mm-hmm. That helps a lot.
Yeah.
No, but shooting is a super stressful thing, mm-hmm. right? And competition, you know, I kind of relates to, you know, a firefighter deployment like that, in the sense that there's pressure and there's, you know, this is what matters, right? Mm-hmm. And people don't think that, you know, you can relate the two, but you put someone on a clock and now there's a time restraint and you know that you're competing against someone that can kick your ass if you make even the slightest mistake. That adds a lot of pressure, and it's all self-induced pressure, right? It's all pressure you're putting on yourself. But there's a lot of mental stuff that goes into the game, and if you can deal with that kind of stuff and ignore their performance and just focus on what you need to do, you're ahead of the game.
All right. Good mindset stuff. All right, let's talk about ASYM just before we go, how people can get in touch with him. It's ASYM Ammo, A-S-Y-M. Ammo.com is the yep. website, right?
And we've actually got a promotional code for your viewers. So this code is going to save you guys 10% on anything you buy at asymammo.com. If you use the discount code thearmsroomshow in your discount code, that'll save you 10%.
That's all lowercase?
All lowercase, cool. All one word.
Cool.
And that'll save you 10% on anything at asymammo.com.
Awesome, man. Thank you so much for that. You guys are also on Instagram. You're on Facebook.
We are.
You guys got all kinds of cool stuff going on social media. One cool thing I want to point out before the box where we wrap things up. So your guys' bulk stuff comes in these nice 250-round boxes, sure. which I got to tell you, I actually really, really like. I like that you open it up and it's just a bag of ammo inside.
Right.
Because all I'm going to do with the tiny little individual boxes is just throw them away anyway.
Yeah, they're a pain in the butt.
But this is something I can grab. Like, you know, my son, like I said, you know, he recently started shooting. And so he can just grab a box out of one of the cases and he's going to have all the ammo he needs.
Yeah. And that right there is enough for a decent sized training session mm-hmm. or pretty much any local match you'll mm-hmm. go to here in Arizona.
And so he can just grab that and go. And one thing we like, you know, we're big fans, of course, of you know, promoting Arizona companies because we're in Arizona. That's where we got our start. And what I love about your guys' box, if you guys can see this on the camera today, I don't know. One end of the box, right. Arizona flag, which got I it. Totally dig. Other side of the box, of course.
America.
Old Glory, right? So I love the fact that you guys put that right there on your boxes. It's very, very cool. Any parting information you want to give before we wrap things up, man?
Well, you know, if you guys have any questions, feel free to reach out to me on Facebook. Just search my name, Nils Jonasson, NilsJonasson, and hit me up on Facebook. I'd be happy to answer any questions you have on, you know, ASYM Precision Ammunition or any questions in general. So
if you want to see, watch this man work, it's pretty impressive. When I was still going out to Tuesday Night Steel, when I had the time on Tuesdays, I would go out there and sometimes, like no homo, I would watch Neil shoot just because you can pick up a lot, you know, from right. watching someone else. And it's always impressive, you know, watch someone who really knows their craft run through the gun. Very, very awesome. So if you guys want to watch him work and see what he does, you know, all kinds of cool videos out there of you shooting and everything. So make sure you guys check that out. Nils is a humble guy, so he's not going to talk a lot about it, but he's very good at what he does. And you should definitely watch him because there's definitely a couple of cool things you guys can pick up. So thanks, Nils, for coming on the show.
Yeah,
really pleasure. Appreciate it, man. Thanks for all the work you guys do over at ASYM. You're doing a hell of a damn good job. So
thanks. We'll keep it up.
All right, guys, remember you can bring us out to train with you. You can host us in contact info at trainingaz.com. We'll give you all the information about how to get us out there and get our hard opinions in person. Make sure you follow us on Facebook and Instagram, Independence Training, The Arms Room Show, Redwire Gear, John's Company, and of course, ASYM Ammo. We're proud members of the Heroes Media Group. Check out the other shows that are on the network. I think 25 now, Dave, something like that. We're still number one. We've been number one for like 3 years running.
Duh.
For a while, we weren't number one, but that was because that chick had really nice cans, and there's nothing I can do about that. I tried to get John to – he's got solid B cups. So I was trying to get John
wear
to,
a low-cut, you
know,
shirt.
Yeah, kind of, you know, lift some and
Daisy
push.
Dukes
wear some a little V-neck, but – yeah, we fell out of our single place there for a while. I think we're back in it now, so we appreciate that. Next week, we're going to have Cecil Birch from Immediate Action Combatives. He's been on our show before, but he's talking about another, of course, patron-requested show, which is about sticky-pokey-stabby things. He's going to talk to us about everyday carry knives and what should be considered an everyday carry knife and what's super ridiculous. And there's, oh, my gosh, in the world of knives – there's some ridiculous crap out there. So,
oh, yeah.
We'll look at that next week. Until next time, stay aware, stay safe, and train hard. You've been listening to The Arms Room.